Monster Man, bonus episode, Creatures of the Woods. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. This episode is one of my intermittent bonus episodes, in which I kind of talk about whatever takes my fancy. And this goes out to my Patreon subscribers. So if you're a subscriber at any level, you'll be hearing this episode, and I'll be thanking you for your patronage. So yeah, thanks. Anyway, today's episode is inspired by the fact that a Kickstarter that I backed a while back just delivered, and that was a Kickstarter for a game called The Woods 2nd Edition. Now, The Woods is actually not an RPG, although it does have optional RPG rules in the back. It's a miniature skirmish game created by Jeff Solomon Sims and Christopher Kale. And I know Jeff and Chris, and I was very excited to, you know, I never got into The Woods 1st Edition, but it was something that I always meant to check out. I have some of the miniatures, and I should get some more because they're very nice. But basically, I thought that this would be appropriate for an episode of Monster Man because when I look at the rulebook, it's about 200 pages, of which probably about 100 pages is monsters. Well, not monsters, they're creatures, right? I mean, the perspective of this game is that these are not monsters. They're not there to oppose some group of player characters. These are all just the different kinds of creatures that live in the woods. And what kinds of creatures are we talking about? Well, they're mostly creatures inspired by British folklore, and this felt relevant because of all of the British folklore inspired monsters that we'd been seeing in recent episodes of Monster Man. I'm talking about things like Annis, the Bacan, the Barghest, and lots of others, right? There'll be a large number of these different sort of, the Boobry, for instance. There were large numbers of these different sort of goblin-y, sprite-y kind of creatures. And Jeff mentioned that some of them were also in the woods. And I thought that I would take a look, not specifically at monsters that have also been at Monster Man, but just at a couple of the monsters from the woods and kind of, you know, see what they're like and whether one could use them in a fantasy RPG. I mean, I think the answer to that is yes, right? So to take the game's perspective on these creatures, I'll just read a little bit from the introduction to the 2nd edition. The woods originated as a world and miniatures range inspired by the creatures of British and European folklore, which sometimes get co-opted into high fantasy, but rarely enjoy their own unique setting. So we get about 10 pages of setting, which is very, you know, very folklore-y, full of, you know, haunted woods and barrow rings and so forth. And then we get a bunch of creatures all divided into different sort of factions, basically because, you know, this is a war game, right? So the idea is that you would assemble your war band, probably about, you know, I don't know, they talk about having as few as 4 or as many as 15 models, although you can also do big battles. But assembling this from sort of the different creatures that are part of your faction. So the different categories of monster in this game are, you got your humans, the Tuatha, then you got wood folk, fen folk, hill folk, mine folk, fair folk, merfolk, and animals. So let's take a look at a couple of monsters from these categories. The starters of the wood folk are the pixies, and I love these guys. They are very different from the, you know, little men in Robin Hood hats of Dungeons and Dragons, and I think all the better for it. And it describes them as, of all the folk in the mortal realm, the most interested in Tuatha affairs and most likely to be found near a mortal settlement are the pixies, or at least they would be if they weren't so good at not being spotted. Pixies bear a strong resemblance to hedgehogs, with a bluish tinge to their short fur and sharp black prickles. They often mislead careless adventurers with their harmless, somewhat sulky appearance, but do not be deceived. For all their tiny stature, they are quite capable of taking on opponents of significant size. It talks about the structure of pixie clans, and it says that they're troublesome and mischievous creatures. They target lone wanderers, and I think this is a wonderful piece of characterization. It says, pixies have a dim view of intellectual effort and take great pleasure in distracting contemplative types with activities such as dropping stones on their heads. And it says that they inhabit underground places like rabbit burrows or badger sets. Sometimes they almost deliver tribute, so like they'll go into a badger set and instead of driving the badger out, they'll basically pay it rent, right? They'll steal eggs and other food from human settlements and like split it with the badger so that the badger protects them and allows them to stay there. Well, I like this idea of the pixie as kind of like the like mischievous and lazy, you know, a bit like Tom Sawyer, right? They're childish. You can imagine that pixies put a lot of effort into getting out of work. And that kind of trickster character, I think, is a characteristic folklore monster, but one that's harder to do in a role-playing game where you're more likely to be getting into direct conflict. So here, this sets up the idea that pixies become enraged when they're provoked and they can actually be quite dangerous. Even these normally non-violent folk can be provoked into fighting, and when they do, they are actually quite dangerous. And there's an illustration here of a pixie riding on the back of a badger. The pixie warband will have a clan leader, a laird, plus any number of sort of regular members of the clan. They have makar, who are like bards. They have hunters, who can take an optional badger steed, and then they can also have badgers who join them. The idea of pixie cavalry riding around on the backs of badgers is like a pretty terrific one. They don't even really need to be giant badgers. They'd be a nuisance, you know. And you could definitely have the fun scene where human-sized player characters are being attacked by effectively a pixie army. And they're so much bigger than them that it seems one-sided. Realistically, how many badgers do you think you could take in a fight? Like, I reckon I could take 1 to 2 badgers. Maybe more. You know, it'd be a desperate struggle if for some reason badgers were attacking me. In real life, most animals, if they menace you, you can menace them back and they'll run off because they're not stupid. Like, they might as well run away. But imagine uncharacteristically intelligent and aggressive badgers swarming on you. You know, you could handle a few. If I had like a spear and a shield, I could kill a good number of badgers, although I'd feel super bad about it. But then at the same time, maybe they're being ridden by little pixies who are shooting arrows at me, and I don't know. You know, you sort of have this like Gulliver's Travels kind of you know, being swarmed by a bunch of little guys, and you could do almost like a parody of the pixies as humans fighting a giant. Right, so all the things that player characters would want to do to a giant, the pixies would try to do to the player characters. So that could be fun. Plus, if you made the pixies a little bit bigger, I mean, you can play pixie characters in this game. You could be one of these pixie bards or pixie hunters, you know, riding around on his badger, scouting far afield from the pixie settlement. And I think that that's a pretty fun image. And that's just one of the many creatures in the woodfolk. There are also boggarts, boogles, Dinadru, who are some kind of like sentient trees. You got the Fodden, who's a kind of a burly wild man type. The Gillydu, the Pisky, which is not the same as a pixie. The Wolver. Now, the Wolver is, I want to say, a creature from Orcadian folklore. I think that's right. Or maybe from Shetland. It's one or the other. But from Atlantic Scotland, anyway. They're not werewolves. They're wolf men, if that makes sense. Like, they're not humans who turn into wolves. They're just wolf-like beings. I think that's right. Certainly that's the case in the woods. Then we have the fen folk. Now, the Maeri are... I don't think Jeff would mind my saying that they bear a strong resemblance to the Fimir from Warhammer Fantasy, and I have a dim memory of reading somewhere that that's actually because the Fimir are based on some other source. An Alan Lee illustration? I want to say I read about this on the Realm of Zhu, but off the top of my head, I don't recall. And of course, these have all the kind of misty weirdness that you would expect from fen-dwelling creatures. And a particular kind of group of Maeri paladins, these guys called the Coral Knights. Apparently, the Maeri once had this lost city that was shattered into fragments. Some of these were recovered, and so they're able to track where the other ones have gone. They believe that once they recover all the pieces of their lost city, they'll be able to put it back together. So there's this order of knights who basically have this this goal of going and tracking down all the pieces and putting them back together, at which point they'll be able to restruct their fen utopia. You got your hill folk, who include leprechauns, who have a marvelous illustration, spriggans, pechs, if that's how they're pronounced, and wonderful guys called Nogs, who are spirit hosts, and they have the miniatures are beautiful. I'm going to get some of these. They have kind of carved wooden masks. Plus our old friends, the Bargist and the Bacon. And here, the Bacon is represented as a kind of shape-changing goat creature, which is consistent with the story of the Bacon and Callum McIntosh. And then there are yet more creatures: the Fuka, the Tro, the Mine Folk are gnomes. And they are, you know, these kind of underground miney type characters. They fight against goblins who have a wonderful sense of that goblin mischief. I have a bonus episode on goblins coming up, I think probably in a day or two. And these guys are great examples of this. Talks about the goblins and says, "It's likely that the goblins originate from many different realms and planes, but their cultural identity is now so heavily forged by their experiences in the Fey Mines that they identify as a single people. The goblins were pressed into manual labor, forced to endure perpetual toil for meager rations. A deep-seated hatred of the Fae was trampled into the hearts and souls of the goblins. When the fair ones departed, many of the folk began to seek a way to return to their own realms, or settle quietly in the mortal realm. Not so with the goblins. They no longer considered themselves to have a single home to return to. They'd been drawn together from myriad places and regarded themselves as being stronger for their differences. Their sole desire became the pursuit of the Fae to the realm of Anuvin and an end to the World Dancer's tyranny. Only a few things stood in their way. Firstly, goblins are not terribly bright. As such, they struggle with such concepts as organization and planning, which are usual for a successful assault. Secondly, they have absolutely no idea where Anuvin is or how to go about getting there. As a result, the goblins' war plans mainly consist of strutting about, shouting slogans, blowing up chunks of mountainside with experimental weapons, and celebrating how much that will hurt the Fae when they finally manage to launch their invasion. The other inhabitants are of Mount Silence, the gnomes and Huldra, are less than impressed with the goblins' exploits. They are not as impervious to pain as the goblins. And then it talks about the ruler of the goblins, an elected bogle known as the Bogler Khan. This election is, as you would expect from such a disorganized bunch, on a rather ad hoc basis. Sometimes the Bogler Khan can change several times in an hour, sometimes their reign lasts several cycles, especially if they keep their heads down and don't ask anyone to actually do anything. It has been known for there to be several Bogler Khans reigning at a given time, just because one group of goblins decided to appoint a new one, and didn't tell anybody. And there is an absolutely delightful illustration of the several different types of goblins. They've got wonderful suits of armor, and one of them is chasing another with a mace with a gleeful expression on his face. And then there's just more. You know, there's yet more minefolk kobolds. There's Gnawlocks, who are tribal rat guys. The fair folk themselves, who have sort of an 80s-y, Bowie kind of flair to them. The Huldra, the Huldroyer, who are kind of life-draining, other-dimensional creatures. They're the menfolk of the Huldra, come from their home dimension to get the other half of their people back. But in order to do that, they had to make some pretty dangerous bargains. You got the Puka, who are sort of fish people. Quite deep one-y. All just, there's more and more and more. I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole list, but there are so many of these wonderful woodland creatures. And I, you know, even just a few of them, I think, would really support a, you know, British and European folklore-inspired D&D game. Isn't it interesting that there's so much British and European folklore in D&D, but I don't know that there's truly a British folklore-inspired setting, unless that's Dolmen Wood. I've bought a couple of the issues of Wormskin that have Dolmen Wood stuff in them, but I've yet to read them. There may be an upcoming Dolmen Wood episode. Anyway, The Woods is great, and it does a wonderful job of combining kind of, I want to say, aspects of British folklore, but also kind of like the whimsy and weirdness of classic children's literature. And I think that that's a good, that slightly anarchic tone that you get in a lot of kids' fiction, I think is a really good place to go for these kind of fairy and goblin creatures. Now, this isn't a commercial or anything. Jeff doesn't know that I'm recording this and he can't hear it, but it came across my desk. I've been reading it and I've been excited to talk about it. And so that means you get some bonus content, because the fact that I'm recording more Boko these days is definitely proof that my record stuff, if I'm excited about talking about it, policy is work. Anyway, that's been a bonus episode of Monster Man. I hope you all enjoyed it. Thank you once again for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.